15.
We're up to number 15, and that's dying with a Y. There's no obligation to die with an I, but to dying with a Y, which means coloring on Shabbos. So we're not allowed to paint the house, we're not allowed to dye clothing, we're not allowed to dissolve colors in water, we're not allowed to make chemical solutions. Developing film might be a problem as well, and of course, all these things I think you can do without on Shabbos, and no one's going to kill you, and you're not going to be killed and feel frustrated you can't paint the house on Shabbos. Where does the problem arise? Problem arises not so much for you, but rather for Katie, people like you, when it comes to makeup.
Right.
Makeup, on a very basic level, is very forbidden on Shabbos. If you put on makeup and it's a permanent makeup on your face, it's definitely forbidden on a biblical level. Because dying on Shabbos with a Y has to be something that's permanent. Like you paint the house, it's going to stay for a few years. Permanency in Jewish law, especially within the realm of Shabbos, is usually a period of 24 hours. So therefore, if you're going to leave makeup on your face and stay for 24 hours, that's a biblical prohibition. If normal makeup, as I understand today, doesn't stay for 24 hours, it gets washed off, like lipstick or whatnot, then it's a rabbinic prohibition. Again, using the Kluft methodology, that they said if you do that, you'll do this, and therefore that's forbidden as well. So you put nail polish on, eventually the nail polish chips off after you wash your hands a number of times. That would be forbidden on a rabbinic level. So makeup on Shabbos is a problem. They do have something that you can buy today, which apparently does solve the halachic issues, because it not only degrades it to a rabbinic prohibition, but degrades it to under that, which that would make it totally permitted, and it's called Shabbos makeup. So if you go online, I'm sure you can find something called Shabbos makeup, which I'm sure is okay, under the rabbis that give it its supervision. I'm not exactly sure totally about how it works. I know on the actual institution of it, it's very similar to the microphone on Shabbos, or the kosher microphone that's out there. There are halachic issues still with it. It's not totally and utterly okay. It's not going to be, like I said to you with regard to kneading, that if you have a thin batter and you do it in an abnormal fashion, then it's already totally permitted. Here I think it's more problematic. But I'm not familiar with Shabbos makeup, I have to admit. Maybe I should look into it. But my wife doesn't use it, so that's why I don't know about it. I don't need it too, so I'm okay. My cheeks are always red. The only solution, of course, is to put on makeup Friday night and hope that it will stay as long as possible. Don't put on makeup Shabbos morning, and it's okay. Having said that, there are women that are very sensitive, and they buy the Shabbos makeup, which I think solves many issues, as well as makeup or putting on makeup has to be in a way that it's like dying. But let's say it's something, like a powder that you stuff on you, throw on your face, and it somehow brings a little color into your face, that would be permitted. It's not considered the normal way of doing it. Plus, it's not permanent, so therefore, it would probably be okay. Using lipstick on Shabbos would be totally prohibited because of another reason. Not so much because of a dying reason, which is a problem, as I said, at least on a rabbinic level. But there's another thing of Shabbos called Mimachek, which means smoothing. We'll get to that later on, but smoothing is one of the 39 prohibitions of Shabbat, and you're not allowed to smooth the surface on Shabbat, so therefore, you take lipstick, as you put it on, it's going to become smoother and smoother and smoother. Some have suggested this, that therefore you're not allowed to use toothpaste on Shabbos, because what you're doing is you're brushing your teeth and you're smoothing your teeth. Rav Soloveitchik absolutely never understood it. He said, what do you mean? If you're smoothing your teeth, you have no teeth left eventually. All you're doing is taking off the dirt or the decay or whatever it is off your teeth. It's very much like washing a dish, and therefore I do brush my teeth on Shabbos based on that. Some suggest that you're not allowed to use the toothpaste because it's smoothing the toothpaste out. Others say, what do you mean? It's a gel. It's a thick gel, but it's a gel. It's not like lipstick where you're clearly smoothing it, and it's absolutely prohibited, or a bar of soap, which again is prohibited on Shabbat. We only use liquid soap on Shabbat. But there's no question that with regards to toothpaste, he didn't find it to be a problem. Anyway, that's with regards to lipstick per se or mascara per se. Those are definitely, definitely dying on Shabbos, and you'd have that additional prohibition as well. With regard to other things that you use, I'm not exactly totally familiar here, I think. My wife's makeup thing that's on our dresser. Most of it, you are either smoothing or you're dying. There is some sort of a powder I once saw that you just powder your face. That's what they think they call the powder room. You powder your face in the powder room. So in the powder room, that would not be considered the normal way of dying. You don't take a bucket of paint and splatter it on the wall. It would also not be considered permanent because it probably wouldn't stay in your face permanently. So it would be two different, two changes, and two changes usually make it permanent.
Which is maybe why you see lots of powder. I feel like there's a lot.
Could be. I have to admit that in North America, in Israel, I've seen this law kept. In North America, I've seen this law abused. I see many women come to Shul Shabbos morning with various coats of makeup, and I'm very surprised to see it. There was a case once where here in Halifax, we had a few people here, and unfortunately, they were sitting shiva, they were mourning, and they were going over the laws of mourning, and it's very rare, I have to admit, that a family really wants to know all the laws of mourning. You want to do it properly. So I was very happy that this was the case. It's unfortunate circumstances. So we're going through many of the laws, there were many questions asked, and I really had to be on my toes to know the answers. It wasn't a normal occurrence. So one of the things they asked was with regard to Shabbat. Shabbat, there's various laws of mourning that are uplifted, others are not. And they asked, what about makeup? So makeup is prohibited all through Shiva. So I very innocently, but not so innocently, said, well, makeup is not permitted any Shabbat, so it's no big problem. She goes, ah, I go, forget it, no comment. So anyway, makeup is permitted, it's prohibited every Shabbos for this reason, and there are ways of getting around it. Like I said, there's a whole production today of Shabbos makeup. You can look on the internet, and you can buy it, and it's okay. You may suggest that this is a problem. Why would you say Shabbos makeup is a problem? I think I mentioned this to you once. Marit ayin, or having people know, or think, not know, people think that you're doing something wrong. So for example, if you're eating a cheeseburger, and it happens to be a kosher piece of meat, and tofu cheese without an ounce of milk in there, there's no problem halachically, correct? But there's a problem on a rabbinic level that people might think that you're eating a cheeseburger that's prohibited. So what do you do in a case like that? You put up a big sign, tofu cheese. Or you eat the tofu cheese on the table. I'll give you another example. No, okay.
So wait, the prohibition?
The general prohibition throughout the Torah, general, that's called marit ayin, which means what your eye might see. The eyes are not like the brain. The brain thinks, hopefully. Not everyone uses their brain to think, but most people use their brains. The eyes is to see, it's to gaze. So therefore, when you basically are looking around, you can see things, and right away you make assumptions. First impressions count, says many psychologists. And therefore, you go and you see a Jew eating a cheeseburger, even if he's eating tofu cheese and good kosher meat, you think it's prohibited. So therefore, what you do in a case like that, in order to prevent it, is to do what?
So you said, carry a big sign. Mm-hmm.
Carry a sign and put on the table, let's say, the tofu cheese package, which says in it in big letters, par, meaning not meat, not dairy. Or I'll give you another case that's very, very common. You're at a meal, you eat a meat meal, everything's good. After the meal, you want a hot drink, I have a cup of coffee. You have a cup of coffee with milk. The milk is dairy, not dairy milk. By the way, in parentheses, not every non-dairy creamer is not really dairy.
Yeah.
Be careful. Make sure it says OU Parv on it. If it doesn't say Parv, it could have dairy supplements in there, even though it's non-dairy. Okay, people that are lactose intolerant are taught, even if they're not Jewish, look for the Parv sign. Right. They know the Parv sign because they know without it, it could have enzymes.
Most probably would be.
Again, you have to check.
Yes.
So, anyway, and then in that case, the law is you have to somehow make people understand that it's part of the milk by leaving the milk container on the table. This is only true, of course, in the realm of things that people might think that are no good. There are many, many, many things today that people will think are fine. Why would they think it's fine? Because it's already acceptable. Like non-dairy creamer is acceptable already today. To say that it's a sensational thing that nobody has is absolutely preposterous. Maybe in those cases you don't even need anymore to have the thing on the table. For example, margarine is made par for many, many years. If on Friday night, in between the meat and the dessert, you want to have some challah with margarine, it's very hard for me to believe people will think you're eating dairy margarine. But in the case here of makeup, I have to admit that I think there might be a problem because how many people know about Shabbos makeup? And again, how many people know about the makeup issue in general? So, I debate about it. What can I say? I'm still debating about it. And I learned about Shabbos makeup as a rabbi and all that only because I'm on a mailing list of something and I got a brochure from one of the kosher agencies out of Baltimore and it was in there. So I didn't know. And on a side issue, like, I wouldn't know about it. So, it might be an issue there. I'm just raising the issue.
Yes.
Now, what's the the meaning behind the making sure that you don't? Is it an offense? Are you offending other people by making them suppose that you're breaking the law, or is it like what is the?
I would say as follows. I'd say it's a very good question. What is Marit Ayin based on? I'm not going to go into the whole detailed discussion now about what exactly is it. Is it really something prohibited, or is it just something that you might think is prohibited? And there's many ramifications between those two points of view. I'll just say that there are different kinds of rabbinic enactments. We learned about the cliff methodology. We gave examples. There's another kind of rabbinic enactment that I would say is for the social welfare of the Jewish people. One of the more known enactments is not to marry more than one wife. It's absolutely permitted by Torah law to marry more than one wife. For the social welfare of the Jewish people, a guy named Rabbi Gershom came out in the 7th, 8th, 9th century, I forget already, and said, no, we've kept that to this very day, at least in the Ashkenazic world. This particular one, I think, goes under that particular rubric. For social welfare of the Jewish people, you don't want slander going around. Problem is our mouths work faster than our brains. So before our brains can tell you it's slander, you already spit it out of your mouth. And as such, they put on this particular prohibition to prevent that from happening. And I think that's part of many different prohibitions that are for the social welfare of the Jewish people. There's also, they can base it on a famous verse that's written in the Torah with regard to Moshe and the war. The Jewish people fought a war in the Book of Numbers, in the Book of Bamidbar. And after the war, they came back with many of the spoils. So Moshe wanted to divide it up even Stephen, the way he thought. So he told the various people, listen, I want you to keep a very clear accounting of it. And he uses the term, v'hi yitem nikiyim me'ashem u'mi'yisrael. So you should be clean from God and in the eyes of the Jewish people. To be clean in the eyes of God, God knows what you do. If you're eating a tofu burger, then it's no problem. The Jewish people don't necessarily think that. So in order to be clean on both sides, it's important to have these checks and balances in place. And I think it's very much part of what it means to live in a community. You're not living alone, you're living part of a wider Jewish community. And therefore, what you do can influence many different people. God forbid, a person goes sees you're in McDonald's, he'll think it's kosher. He doesn't know you're eating, you're drinking just a cup of coffee. Therefore, you have to be very, very cognitively aware of those things. And I think it makes sense. Okay, so we finished the issue of dying, and with regard to its normative practice. Now, there's some abnormal things with regard to dying that I just want to bring up. One of them is some people are very careful on Shabbat not to put, for example, red wine into white wine, because you're dyeing the juice, you're dyeing the wine. Many have assumed that there's no dyeing with regard to food. There's no such thing, only on the face, only on the wall, not in food. So food coloring wouldn't be a problem, but I don't know why you would use food coloring on Shabbos, you're not allowed to cook. But food coloring, or putting that in, or, I don't know, adding a little wine into your Coca-Cola and changing the color, would not be an issue. There are those that are stringent, and therefore they say put in the color before the other thing.
Actually, I thought you mixed two things.
You did, and that's part of the issue. I don't think it's a problem, but some are stringent, and they prevent it. They put in the color before the whatever. They put in the red wine before the white wine.
Right.
What if you spill juice, wine?
Right. If you spill on the tablecloth, obviously an accident is not something that Jewish law recognizes with regard in general, but on Shabbos it does. What do I mean? You throw a baseball into someone's window, it's an accident. You're a good person, you still have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not blaming you, but you still have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to Shabbat specifically, as I mentioned last time, we have a term called Alechet Machshevet, which means you have to want to break Shabbos in order to break Shabbos. So therefore, if you spilt on the table, that would be considered an act that you didn't want to do. It's not an act that you would definitely do. Namely, definitely do means that if you continue walking into the wall, you're going to put on the light. You know it's going to go on. That's an act that's definitely going to happen, even though you don't want to do it.
What was the Hebrew for?
Melechet Machshevet. Melechet is Melechot. All the things that are forbidden on Shabbos. Machshevet is thinking. Okay. So anyway, when it comes to Shabbos, you have to really want to break Shabbos in order to do it. And therefore, an inadvertent act in which you're walking and you by mistake knock something down, or you're walking straight and all of a sudden the door opens because there was an electric sensor under the ground, is not something that you're liable for on Shabbat. And therefore, if you're at a table and you spilled something on the tablecloth, you're definitely not liable for it on Shabbat. However, where is there a case where you might be liable, and I say might? Let's say a person, has a cut on Shabbat, he's bleeding. If you want to put a Band-Aid on the cut, Question is putting a band-aid on the cut, coloring the bandage. Many assume not, simply because, A, the bandage is not a cloth that you're going to keep forever. It's not like a sweater you're going to dye. It's going to be thrown out. Today it's disposable. Once upon a time it wasn't disposable. Today it is disposable. So once you're going to use it, it's finished. You're throwing it in the garbage and it's not a permanent act. Secondly, you don't want it to happen. The fact that it's happening is its business. But you want to stop the bleeding. You'd be very happy if there wasn't bleeding. It happens to be bleeding. So that falls under the rubric of one of the things on Shabbat called Psik Resha Delo Michalei. Forget about it, remember that. Yeah. That means that something will definitely happen, namely that this bandage will definitely be dyed with the color of the blood coming out of the cut, but you don't want it to happen. In fact, you have no, not only don't you want it to happen, you'd rather it not happen. So in that case, it's forbidden on a rabbinic level. Add to that you're doing it, that you're putting it onto a bandage, which is not permanent, so you have two rabbinic prohibitions, and once you have two, usually it's okay. And therefore, I use bandages in Shabbat, if needed. Not to mention the fact that sometimes it's life endangering, but even if it's not life endangering, like, bleed out a cut for a few minutes, nothing's going to happen. It's terrible. First of all, I think even if it's not dangerous at that moment, it can be dangerous in the future. Let's face it, you're at a house, and you're bleeding, and you just bleed on the table. Bleed all over. That's very nice. You're cutting a challah, you cut your finger, and instead of getting a bandage, you bleed on it, and someone eats that. So he's eating your blood. It's not his blood. That can be very dangerous in the long run. So therefore, it's definitely dangerous, I think. And add that to the puzzle, and therefore you can use bandages and Shabbos. So we said knocking over a drink is not a problem. Knocking, however, bandages could be a problem. We explained away why it isn't. Other examples of dying that might be a problem, anything you can think of.
What about cleaning up them?
Like what?
Spill red wine on the floor and
you
want to clean it.
Okay. Spill red wine on the floor and you want to clean the floor. So the question is, what kind of floor do you have?
Yeah. It's carpet.
If it's carpet, it's a problem because you'd be laundering.
Yeah.
Forget about dying, you'd be laundering. You don't want to die.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want the carpet to have it, and it wasn't done on purpose, so there's no problem in a dying room. But you definitely want to launder it, and laundering is forbidden on Shabbat,
mm-hmm.
So you have to wait till Saturday night to clean it. I've heard of a trick that in order for something not to stain, you spill salt on it.
Yeah.
That's okay because it's a need of Shabbos. You're not doing it for after Shabbos because you just want to stain right now. And you're not really laundering because it's not laundered. That's okay. If it works. I don't know if it works. I've heard it. It's one of these superstitions. But apparently it does work. Something that works. People use it. So that's okay. I've heard the question asked. So I know people who want to use it. They spill, if something spills on your shirt on Shabbos, so they put some salt on it or something. I don't know. Sounds good. Never did it.
It does. Color. Yeah, so
oh, those diffusion. Okay, makes sense.
I think that's what you scrub it after. You
can't scrub, but you can definitely put the salt on Shabbat. Okay. The next prohibition of Shabbat is not something that's very useful. It's called spinning. When you make tzitzit, like these things that you wear, four-cornered garments, you have to weave it, and spinning, and preparing the loom for weaving, and then putting it through the machine, and then weaving it, all these things in the next few prohibitions of Shabbat, and then of course separating the threads is another prohibition of Shabbat, and all these things, I'd say, just going through our numbers here, number 16 through 20, those 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, those five are basically all have to do with making threads for the tzitzit, or for any sort of cloth you want to make. Today, thank God, we usually buy if we want to sew our own clothing. I don't know people that do, but if you want to sew your own clothing, you go to the store and you buy the materials. I don't think this is very useful. We're up to number 21.
So there were, spinning, weaving.
All these things. I'm not going to go through them. Spinning, weaving, preparing the loom, many others, separating into threads. Those are all part of the process of making cloth, which are prohibited on Shabbat. You have to remember that in the desert they couldn't go to the local store for materials. Having said that, in our common practice today of living where we do, these things are very, 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 very not common. We're going to get to the more common ones right now. Once you have the thread and you have the material and you want to start sewing, what do you need to do? Pick a needle.
You got
it.
Thread the needle? Okay, so threading the needle actually is prohibited on Shabbat.
Okay.
That's called Osebate Nirim. I don't know how to say that in English. That's one of the 20. One of the four I just mentioned, or the five I just mentioned. But after you thread the needle, what do?
You tie a knot.
Yes, you tie a knot. And this is so practical on Shabbos. Very, very practical. This is one of the more joyful parts of Shabbos learning, because it's really, you can really make a whole few lessons on it. Not just on the practical aspect, but just understanding it. Tying a knot and untying a knot are the next two prohibitions of Shabbos, called 21 and 22, the opposites. Tying a knot means basically tying a permanent knot with a permanent string. All string probably is permanent today. So tying a permanent knot would be considered a knot that you're not expecting to untie. Give me an example. Shoelaces, I would assume that you want to untie. We'll have to get to the shoelaces later.
A permanent knot.
Remember in the desert they were building the tabernacle, so they had to tie down the various parts of it. The tabernacle was like a big tent. So they used what kind of a knot? I'm sure they didn't make a nice bow. What did they use?
Like a granny
knot? I don't know,
A double knot.
A double knot.
A double knot is usually one that you're not going to untie.
Yeah.
So therefore, making a double knot with two different strings is prohibited. But even making a double knot with one string is prohibited. A typical example of this, of making a double knot, is going to be on top of a bag. Let's say you're throwing out the garbage, you make a double knot. Totally prohibited on Shabbos, on a biblical level. That's permanent, you don't want it to be opened. If it's going to be open at the dumpster, it's only going to be somehow ripped open, but you do not want it to be open, and it's a permanent knot, and that's prohibited on Shabbat. So therefore, on Shabbat, it is common sometimes to throw, if you're going to throw out the garbage, you cannot make a double knot, you have to make a single knot, or just put it together in some way. Not only is that not prohibited, but let's say sometimes on top of a garbage bag, they don't have the tie-y little thingajing. What they have is nothing. And all you do is you twirl it around a little bit and you make a thing. So in one rope, that's prohibited on Shabbat also, so therefore that would be prohibited as well, tying a knot. And of course, untying that knot would be prohibited as well. This is very practical on Shabbos. I mean, many times we're tying knots, we're tying this, we're tying that. We're tying this down, we're tying that down. These things are prohibited on Shabbat if you do a double knot. But let's say, for example, and this happens in certain people that are very aggressive. I love sukkahs, so I like to make a beautiful sukkah. So people make a beautiful sukkah, and they're very scared of the rain. At least outside of Israel, you're more scared of the rain, because Israel usually doesn't rain. So what do? You make a cover over your sukkah. And there are various issues we're going to get to with regard to the prohibition of making a tent on Shabbat. But let's say we solve those issues. Once you have it over, you have a covering in a permissible way, maybe you want to tie it down. You can't make a double knot, if it's Shabbos or if it's the Yom Tov, if it's the holiday. And therefore, again, a single knot is not going to be that strong. So therefore, there's another kind of knot that's called in Hebrew Kesher Aniba, which literally means a tie knot. What's the definition of a tie knot? A knot that you're not expecting to untie. Right? Normal people, not like me, I'm abnormal. But most people tie their ties, and they untie their ties. I tie my ties, and I leave the tie. So I got a problem to tie a tie on Shabbat, because I'm going to leave it for a 24-hour period. So if I tie a knot on Shabbat, I have to untie it on Shabbat, so it won't be permanent. But usually the ties I make are such that I leave them in, right? Until they go to the dry cleaners, they're in. So therefore, shoelaces is again something you're going to untie. So, and shoelaces, first of all, usually make a bow, where you make a knot that's eventually going to be easy to untie. And therefore, it's probably okay. Jews are stringent, so therefore they buy shoes without laces if they want to. But I see no reason to do that. So tying is very, very practical on Shabbos. Untying, of course, is the opposite of what we said. If you have a double knot and you have a this and that and other thing, untying it on Shabbat would be problematic. So, for example, my ties, which I leave permanent, and I want it to be permanent, untying it on Shabbos would be a problem. You have a bag. Let's say you went to the supermarket and you bought some tomatoes. Now you want to make a salad on Shabbos morning. Mm-hmm. Of course, you remember the restrictions. Mm-hmm. What's the restriction on salad?
The pieces have to be bigger than usual.
Correct. So you're going to make a salad in a permissible way on Shabbos morning, and your pieces are going to be bigger than usual. And, you know, you're a good person. You went to the fruit store, and you put the tomatoes in the bag, and you tied a double knot.
No.
What do?
You
break
the bag.
So breaking the bag might be okay. We didn't get to it yet, but one of the prohibitions of Shabbat is ripping or tearing. The question is that tearing? I think it's not, but because the bag is not permanent. It's not supposed to be there forever. On the other hand, you might say it is supposed to be there forever. You can reuse a bag again and again and again, and tearing it might be a problem. There are those that say there's only tearing with regard to cloth, because tearing is the opposite of sewing. So you don't sew a bag. And therefore you'd be able to tear a piece of paper, and you'd be able to tear that. That's not a very widely accepted opinion. So tearing a bag might be a problem. However, I think it's better to tear a bag, because there is a lenient position, and to tie the knot where there is no lenient position. So if you're in a bind where you need those tomatoes and you can't do without them and all that, that's what you should do. Therefore, in my house, when I go shopping, my wife also goes shopping, we never make a double knot in those bags. Just for that reason. You make sure always make a single knot, nothing ever happens, it stays in. Unless you have 20 tomatoes in one bag, in which the bag's probably going to break anyway, but if you're very lucky the bag doesn't break, then you got yourself a deal. So untying is the opposite of tying. Anything you can't tie, you can't untie on Shabbos, whatever it might be.
What about, it's not the same as putting buttons together? Or,
what do you mean?
Well, because it's not tying, but it's...
No, putting buttons together is not a problem.
No.
No, it's not tying. No, we're talking about tying a knot. Zippers also is not a problem.
Okay.
Just putting two things together in a not permanent fashion. You're going to untie it eventually, so it's not a problem. That's more in the, we're going to get to it in a moment, the sewing issue of putting two things together. But with regard to the realm of tying, there's no issue. Any other questions? We're going to get to the tent, yeah. Hold on, with the tent, tent is a practical issue. We'll get to it. It's very practical. Going to go to the realm of wearing a hood on Shabbos as well, so we're going to get to it eventually. Hold on. We're going to get to it. Okay. I just wanted to see if I forgot anything. No, I am okay. 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 Let's go on to sewing, and the opposite of sewing is tearing. Some of the prohibitions of Shabbos are very easy to remember because, you know, there's the prohibition and the opposite of the prohibition is also permitted, prohibited. So he's mentioned tying and untying because this is sewing and tearing. Usually, sewing is the normal way of sewing is to sew something. So sewing is prohibited on Shabbos and therefore sewing on a button, which is more practical, I think, than sewing your own dress today, is prohibited on Shabbos. Not only is sewing prohibited in a normal fashion, but also some on a rabbinic level, some on a biblical level, depends what it is, putting two things together is prohibited on Shabbos if you do it in a permanent way. For example, gluing, taping, stapling, these things are prohibited on Shabbos under the rubric of sewing, or putting two things together. Taping something up would also be prohibited on Shabbat. These are very big issues. And why do I say these are very big issues? Because many things we do on Shabbos and throughout the week are part of it. Not many of us sew every day, so that's okay. We can do without it. We have another shirt. Stapling, I don't think you need to do on Shabbos. Fine. When it comes to taping, gluing also, fine. But what about taping? Very practical. First of all, a Band-Aid. Second of all, a baby's diaper. And you have to remember, if it's prohibited, it's also prohibited to undo it by tearing it. So we've got a big problem there. General tendency is as follows, and again we use the same line of thinking. What is prohibited on Shabbos in the realm of any of the prohibitions? Something permanent. Not something that's supposed to be undone. Baby's diaper is not permanent. That's why she's wearing or he's wearing a diaper. By definition, it is not permanent. A bandage is not permanent. As soon as you stop bleeding, usually you take it off. Therefore, in these particular realms, it's very much safely assumed that you can very easily do it on Shabbos because it's not permanent. However, we still have a problem. It's only one change. Remember we said that usually it's rabbinically prohibited if it's only one change on Shabbos. So you need another change. And maybe the other change here is that what is sewing? Sewing is taking two materials and putting them together. Here it's not really two materials, it's one diaper. You're connecting the diaper to the body. You're connecting the bandage to the body, not becoming one, like stapling. Stapling means you're not going to unstaple it. Taping means it's taped. Here, how can you say you're taping something to your body? Your body is whatever amount of limbs, 248, lilies you have in your body, you're not going to have 249 now. Therefore, they say it's probably okay. There are those that might prohibit it. They'll say doing this and that and the other thing, doing it in an abnormal fashion. But in general, the Jewish world does put on diapers and products. We put on bandages as well. And therefore, sewing in that issue is not a problem. It would be a problem, of course, when we really sew, when you paste, and any of that thing. That would be a problem. Okay? That's with regard to sewing. The opposite of sewing, of course, is tearing. And tearing is very practical. Tearing is very practical because we do it all the time. We tear paper towels to wash up a spill. We tear toilet paper. Sometimes we tear tissue paper. We tear sometimes in a book. You open up a book and it's stuck together. You're tearing part of the book. Tearing happens all the time. Tearing is prohibited on Shabbos. That's number one. Number two is, what is prohibited? So you would say any of the above. There is two opinions, though, I'll bring to the horizon that are not widely accepted, but can be relied on when needed. Number one, there is an opinion that says that tearing that's prohibited is only with regard to cloth. Is not with regard to anything else. Because tearing is the opposite of sewing. So if you're not going to sew it, there's no tearing with regard to it. So various cases can be brought to the horizon of things that you don't sew and you tear. Paper, as I mentioned, toilet paper, tissue paper, all these things are not things that are going to be sewn. And therefore it's okay. So you can tear a piece of paper on Shabbat according to this view. This view is not widely accepted. It shouldn't be relied on. This is a biblical prohibition. You have to be stringent. But it can be relied on when you happen to be in a washroom. There is no pre-cut toilet paper. If you have a big spill, then you have two choices. Choice number one is to use a towel. Using a towel might be a prohibition of squeezing. If you tear off a piece of toilet paper, it might be a prohibition of tearing. Which one is better? It might be better to use the tearing because, well, in this case, it's a good call. I don't know. Because even with regard to squeezing, there's no issue of squeezing if you're not going to squeeze it.
Yeah.
Meaning if it's a towel that's a rag, you're just going to throw it in the wash, no issue, but there's more of a probability of squeezing there. Mm-hmm. With regard to tearing, there is a view that said there's no tearing whatsoever. It's not even rabbinically prohibited. There's nothing. Maybe it'd be better to tear. The other opinion is that tearing is only if you need both pieces. When you sew, what would you do? You tear two pieces of cloth and you sew them together in a certain way. That's the way we sew. So usually when you tear off a piece of paper towel, you just need that piece at that moment. You don't need the two pieces. If you tear a towel in the middle, you need both pieces. But if you tear one piece of towel, paper towel, and you wash it, then you take another piece off and you wash, you don't need both pieces. And there's a view that says that that's okay. So again, to rely on when needed. When needed. I don't think that's the way you should run your Shabbos, but when needed, it's possible. One more thing with regard to tearing paper towels and stuff, is that is that they have a... The manufacturers give us the instructions how to tear. I love it. They think we don't know how to tear, so they put the little line. That might be a prohibition of smoothing. Again, a byproduct of smoothing. By tearing on the line, you're like smoothing the line out. So if you want to tear, according to many authorities, don't tear there, tear somewhere in the middle.
There's also about, I mean, a lot of packaging has writing, right?
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Writing and erasing with regards to packaging. So this is very practical on Shabbos. It happens almost all the time. You're going to see tearing in many different places. And you have to just see what the situation is and if a question needs to be asked.
You ask. Cutting with scissors.
Cutting with scissors would be prohibited on Shabbos, yeah, because it's tearing. Yeah, with a tool. Sure. And scissors is probably, we didn't get to this, but one of the rabbinic prohibitions of Shabbat is muktzeh. And since you can't use scissors on Shabbos because you can't take a haircut, you can't tear a piece of paper, you're not allowed to even pick up the scissors. But we'll get to that later on in our series. All right, now we go into another prohibition of Shabbos, which I don't know how practical you may think it is, but it's very practical. Trapping. Trapping means hunting, basically. Hunting means you go out in the field and you hunt something, and that's considered prohibited. But it's not the hunting that's prohibited. We have to discuss in some other time, is hunting prohibited by Jewish law every day of the year? We'll discuss that. But here, the actual prohibition is trapping, meaning taking an animal that was roaming freely, and you trap it, now it's under your jurisdiction. You can decide for it where it's going to be. So, for example, let's say an ant is roaming and you want to play, it's Shabbos afternoon, you're bored, you put a cup over it, it can't roam. That's biblically prohibited by the prohibition of trapping, right? Some animals that are not meant to be trapped might be rabbinically prohibited, but anyway, back to our thing. If you can find an animal in a specific space, that's considered prohibited on Shabbos. Chasing an animal into an enclosure as well is prohibited on Shabbos. Closing a window to prevent a bird from escaping is prohibited on Shabbos. Closing a container in which a fly entered, setting up traps, all these things are under the prohibition of trapping. Okay? Now you might not think this is so practical, but it definitely is very practical sometimes, because I've seen, especially at sukkahs, when you're in a sukkah, you're outside and the bees come and they're bothering you, so you're trapping in a cup and all the kids, everyone likes to see the bee suffocate to death. So first of all, it's a disgusting to do all year long. You're causing harm to the animal, which is prohibited by another prohibition in the Torah. Might be a biblical, might be a rabbinic, called Tsar Ba'alei Chayim, causing unlawful harm to an animal. Secondly, it's Shabbos and you're trapping it, so it's a biblical prohibition of Shabbos. And number three, the next prohibition of Shabbos, called slaughtering. You know, we're not allowed to slaughter on Shabbos, even an animal, in the Jewish way, but you're not allowed to kill an animal or kill anyone on Shabbos. That's called slaughtering. So for example, if you you take a fish out of the sea on Shabbos, you're slaughtering, because as soon as the fish comes out, it can't breathe, and you're killing it. So you're slaughtering the fish by just fishing on Shabbat. From this perspective, if you kill a bee, you kill a bug, you kill a bug, you kill this or that, the other thing, it's a problem on Shabbos because you're killing on Shabbos, you're slaughtering on Shabbos. Certain things are considered things that are supposed to be slaughtered, right? Other things that are not considered things that are going to be slaughtered by human beings might be okay to kill on Shabbos, but it shouldn't be done in general. So I wouldn't say to do it. Chase out the bee, chase out the fly. If you really understand Shabbos, you understand that all the creative labor is prohibited. So on Shabbos, you're not a creator anymore. You're a creature, just like the rest of the creatures. And if you really understand Shabbos, said Rabbi Yoshua Heschel, then you'd say good Shabbos to the dog. Therefore, killing bees on Shabbos, killing bugs on Shabbos, is absolutely not appropriate for the Shabbos day. And you can't do it. You can't do it. Problem, people do it, people do, chase, whatever. You can chase them out of the house, you can go like that, wave your hand, but it's prohibited on Shabbos, it's a big problem. Okay.
Not a problem in the middle of winter.
Usually not. But stepping on ants on Shabbos is a problem. Also, ants don't function during the winter as well. They're in.
Yeah, with spiders.
A problem. There are certain details we can bring in with regard to dangerous animals and whatnot, but we won't do that now. If it's your dog and you've already trapped it before Shabbos, obviously it's okay. Say, hey, come back home. You're not going to consider trapping it on Shabbos. If it's not your dog, it's a problem. Okay. Skinning. Skinning is the next prohibition of Shabbos, meaning skinning once you slaughter the animal, you take off the feathers off the chicken, that's prohibited. Removing a piece of skin from the chicken is not a problem because they're both edible. They're considered food. But it's not so practical today, skinning and the hides of the animal. But the next prohibition is called tanning. Tanning is after you tan the animal off, usually in order to make it into material, like you want to make it into leather, the skin into leather that they needed for the temple, you salted it. Salting on Shabbos, like salting a pickle, is a problem. Of taking a cucumber and putting it into brine on Shabbos for the first time. I'm not talking about a pickle that you take out of the pickle jar. But if you put it in for the first time, that would be a problem. Putting too much salt on raw meat or applying oil to leather, like polishing your shoes on Shabbos, is prohibited because of this prohibition of tanning. Some suggested, it's not accepted, that salting fruits, vegetables like in a salad is a problem. It's hard to believe because you're not preparing it for whatever. It's just to eat. And therefore, it's probably not a problem. Well, the issue has been raised. If you put a little oil on it, then it's definitely not a problem because then it's taking away the effect of the salt, and that's probably one of the solutions. We'll end today, before we go into next week, all the prohibitions with regard to writing, which are a few. So we're at number 29, and that is scraping. So for example, sometimes you have a problem on Shabbos, you got some mud on your foot, shit, you can't scrape it off on Shabbos. A normal way, if you just do it like by putting your foot on a step and doing like that, that's okay. So smoothing leather, removing hairs from it, using any kinds of creams and ointments is probably a problem of scraping, as we mentioned earlier. Smoothing, scraping, it's the same idea. Using the bar of soap, cleaning soiled shoes by scraping them with a scraper or a piece of metal, smoothing the material with sandpaper, all these things are smoothing, scraping, and they're prohibited on Shabbos. Therefore, we use liquid soap on Shabbos, and we do not use the bar of soap on Shabbos. Practical for when you wash your hands. Once it was very practical, even when you wash the dishes. They used to wash dishes when they had a bar of soap. Today, thank God, there's detergents, and much to my dismay, it even has a kosher symbol on it. You might ask, why is my dismay? My dismay. The answer is because I don't think it needs it. It's just a waste of money. And unfortunately, we're all falling for it. We should restrict our hechsheru. We should restrict giving the kosher symbol to what needs a kosher symbol, not things that do not.
Even though that comes in contact with your plate.
Yeah. Okay.
We do this too, but you put salt on your challah, right?
Yeah, there's no problem with that because you're not smoothing it out.
No, but I heard that it's for remembrance, right?
It's to remember that, yes, it's instead of like sacrifices, we put salt in the challah to remember that it was instead of sacrifices, yeah.
To remember anything in particular? Or
yeah, once upon the sacrifices, you put salt on.
Exactly.
And you have to put salt on the sacrifices.
Okay.
Salt of the earth, we put on our food.
So it's not to remember the Holocaust at the temple?
No, not to remember the Holocaust.